This is the great kind of, I don't know, excitement of the faith, right? Is that not only can you say, I choose not to participate in that, but you can say, I choose to join into that in an act of redemption that can become an act of worship. And I'm able to say that because of the heritage granted to me by people that made different choices before. In other words, that taught me and trained me and the books I've read, stuff like that, to say, that's just absurd. I'm not tempted by that. And so now that's the kind of redemption structures you can build. It is possible to build a structure where every young person in your congregation, every young person in your neighborhood, perhaps every young person in your family would be like, what kind of moron uses AI for a relationship? Yeah, like that, I'm not even tempted by that. Why would I even think about that, right? Welcome to the Be Unbound podcast, where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and how to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And David and I have a conversation, and in it we talk about AI, AI relationships, dating relationships, a great way to find a spouse, guns, hunting, I don't think we catch politics, and a couple of other odds and ends, and we end with an interesting twist on a hymn you probably know, but not the way we're about to describe it. David, anything else to add to that?
I think that if that description isn't enough to get you interested in what we talk about this episode, then nothing else is.
Then we got nothing. David, it's fun to be in studio talking to you again, except for this subject is not necessarily one of my favorite ones. It is one that we seem to come back to a lot. And that is AI, which could be my favorite. I don't know if it's my favorite subject, but I don't mind talking about AI. But the connection between AI and some of the pathologies that AI creates, that's not my favorite subject. And yet, it is an important one. And so we have another kind of piece of evidence there that's worth at least thinking about out loud a little bit.
Yeah. And for the record, I feel like it's just worth noting for our listeners who may be thinking at this point, like, is this just an AI podcast? The answer is we're not intending for it to be. That wasn't our premise when we started out at this point. Our goal, as you hear it at the beginning, is for us to just talk about practical Christian living and just how do we live out our faith in today's world practically. And it's just that AI is unfortunately a very significant reality that is creating a lot of really challenging situations that we have to navigate, especially as people of faith. And so this particular one that I came across, I believe it came out last week, is no exception to that rule. It's an article from NPR talking about 1 in 5 high schoolers has either had a romantic AI relationship or knows someone who has. The statistics are that they conducted surveys of about 800 6th through 12th grade public schools, 1,000 9th through 12th grade students, and 1,000 parents. The majority of them were AI users, and they said 42% of students surveyed said that they or someone they know have used AI for companionship and 1 in 5 for a romantic relationship. So, Jonathan, go ahead and just give us your initial reactions and response to that, partially because I think it's just going to be entertaining.
Yeah, I'm sitting here editing, like, you know, furiously editing what I think my responses should be. So here's something I'm thinking about, David.
Okay,
we do talk about this a lot, and I think it is important because it does intersect dramatically with practical Christian living. However, I'm reluctant to talk about it from a shock value standpoint, right? I mean, like, this is a shocking statistic. 46% of people know somebody has used AI for companionship. 1 in 5 say they or someone they know has had a romantic relationship with artificial intelligence. There's a, maybe it's an age-speaking thing, but there's part of me that just goes, I don't even really have a concept. I mean, I do know how that works, but I don't have a concept of why that's attractive, right?
There's when ChatGPT updated to one of its latest models, there were some people who were online lamenting the loss of their digital spouse that they had because when they updated the model, they lost that, and it's mind-boggling.
There's a level of pathology there that's a little hard to grasp. Okay, so the fact that this is shocking is not shocking to most of our listeners. In other words, I suspect most of you are shocked in the same way. And so we can all be shocked together, and maybe we can get some nice views by putting a clickbait title on this thing and being like, we have all these kids in romantic AI relationships. But we had a conversation recently with some folks at our house on Thursday night about AI. And I'd say that that group includes some pretty big AI power users who are pretty excited about, young people pretty excited about the potentials of AI and how to use it. And just to be clear, they're not using it for companionship. They're using it for some pretty significant creative things, that they're using it to create value and to build things. And you know, they're pretty exciting, right? Some of them are on our Unbound AI track. And so we had this conversation. But in the course of that conversation, I started playing with a little theory, and it's something that I want to kind of trot out here. And that is that practical Christian living implies the level of Christian realism, which is to say that there's a necessity of facing life as it actually is. And here's something that I think that we should confront when it comes to AI. And that is that, you know, here's the contour of the argument, David. AI does all these really scary, terrible things. And then you have people say, yes, but it can be used for good. The technology itself is neutral, and so it can be used for good. And then it's like, yeah, but it's always destroying all these people. It's like, yes, but Christians need to get in there and learn it and use it and stuff like that because, okay, there's merits on those. I understand that. I think there's a missing point here, which is Christian realism says something rather sobering. There's not really an option here. AI is going to be a net detriment to the world. And you say, well, how could you say that? Well, I just mean that by statistical analysis, more people are going to use AI who are not serious about the Christian faith than who are. And since part of our Christian faith says that people are sinful, inherently sinful, that means that the majority of AI, however you decide to cut the numbers, is going to be used for sinful purposes. But I'd even go a step further because of things like, yes, people said that about the internet too. Yeah, well, I don't think that's true about the internet. In other words, I think the internet has been a net damage across humanity if you consider all of the problems caused by pornography, online gambling. I mean, just name whatever vice you'd like to name. And multiply that, and you say there's more people using the internet for evil purposes than are using it for good purposes. But I think it's worse than that. If we continue to move backwards in time, right, I would say the same thing for the printing press. Yes, it made many, many Bibles available to us and created the foundation for the Reformation. It also gave us unbelievable mountains of pornographic magazines. And all kinds of bad ideas, including Marxism, that spread in books, right? In other words, there's a realistic acknowledgement here that anytime humanity creates a new technology, and maybe particularly a new communications technology, the net result is going to be pain and suffering and a proliferation of evil. Now, that's just the nature of who we are as humans, and that's the nature of the way the world works. And that's not to say that we have to reject AI. That's not to say that we say that AI is evil. Those arguments about then we need to learn to use it and all stuff, those are equally valid. But it's worth going, yeah, in every case here, there's going to be some significant casualties and some significant pain caused by this. And our calling is to walk into that and mitigate that as much as possible, redeem that as much as possible, be Christ's witness to the people that are going to be hurt by it. But it does require us to set aside our kind of shock and, you know, headline-inducing, you know, oh my goodness, and instead say, yeah, well, that's not surprising. I mean, consider what AI does. Consider the loneliness of people. You put those two things together, yeah, that's an outcome that we can see happening. Mm-hmm. Let's stop being shocked about it and wasting our energy there, and let's say, all right, how do we find these kids and give them authentic relationships to make the AI look like a shadow, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think that rings true. And I think that it can just be expanded even beyond technology into just pretty much anything that exists in the world. Just
nuclear power, I mean, firearms, whatever technological advancement you want to put in there, dynamite, you know.
I think just the reality of being in a sinful world is just whenever a world that is primarily populated by sinful people, the majority of whom are not Christians, they are going to find a way to use it for sinful means. And the devil is going to do his work, and it is going to be twisted and used for the advancement of the prince of the power of the air. There's a reason for that. I think the reason that I make that distinction is because I don't think that we should necessarily, as Christians, be, as you alluded to earlier, dissuaded from seeking out and advancing technology and seeing what opportunities are out there, just because the world is going to end up using them for a net negative. I think that God has created us to be creative and to create new things that Christians can use and can be used for good. I think we should endeavor to make sure that they are primarily used for good. And so having, you know, more generic, you know, generic tools that, you know, you can make arguments for either way is, you know, can recreate a whole lot of other complications. But I think just a reminder of the fact that this is just the reality of living in a sinful world is that just about anything that you can create that is under the sun is going to be used and is going to be perverted and can be sinful. So I fully agree, but really the time and energy that is spent, especially by so much of what we see on social media and in news networks, of just the shock value that is taken up. I think shock value at this point is a little bit of an oxymoron, because the shock doesn't actually have any value. All it serves to do is get you riled up and not actually do anything productive.
Well, and so let's move on for that, because it's, you know, we want to be practical here. We want to be, and practicality involves some level of productivity. And so I want to say, okay, that's step number one. And we train our students about this in Unbound. We say resilience is understanding first that you live in a sinful world. Now, we go a step further, and so let's get metaphysical for a second. And let me just stay build a strong foundation here. Intelligent people who are determined, okay, let's back up one more step. I have a thesis, David, and teach this in our Navigate class, and talk about this a lot, and it's not something that's original to me. But my thesis is that the majority of people live life subconsciously, meaning they live life half asleep. And so we're constantly telling our students, we want you to live fully awake and fully alive. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, I mean that most people live their life according to how they answer the big questions. Why am I here? What is my purpose? What happens to me when I die? Right? But they've never consciously answered those questions, but they're living them subconsciously, having done that. Right? So it may be that, you know, subconsciously I've decided that I don't know why I'm here. My purpose is to maximize pleasure and minimize pain, and nothing happens when I die, okay? Or when I die, I'm guaranteed to go to heaven, right? I mean, those are some popular subconscious ideas. Okay, well, you will then make the majority of your decisions in life based on those things, but you've never fully confronted them. And so in many ways, you're not really sure why you're winding up the places that you are. So I challenge our students all the time. I want you to live life fully awake, fully alive, which means I want you to confront the realities of life. I want you to ask and answer the big questions, which is not to say that you're going to get perfect answers immediately, but I want you to wrestle with those questions. And as we press that forward, then one of those questions is, you know, what is the world like? Well, the world is full of sin and suffering. And that should not surprise us as a Christian, but we should also know that the only rational response to that is despair. In other words, because there's two things that come with that. First, the world is full of suffering. And secondly, you have no power to change it. And those are as true as the gravity that's pinning me in this chair right now. It is true as the reality of the life in the air that you breathe, right? Life that you live in the air that you breathe. And so you have to soberly face that. And if you stop there, many very intelligent people have gone mad with this reality. This is a horrifying truth, right? But as a Christian, the next step here that happens is we say, and there is a hope that eclipses that suffering. And that second part is the whole story. And so it's worth saying, like, how do you deal with this world full of suffering? Well, there's only two options for it if you don't have the second part. The first is you go mad. I mean, the second is you go mad. The first is you don't deal with it. You prefer to live subconsciously. You prefer to be asleep. You prefer to make up myths about, I can fix this. I have control over this. We can eradicate this, throw enough money, enough time at it. We can eliminate poverty, eliminate suffering, eliminate all these kinds of things. We put enough, you know, laws on the internet, people won't see bad things. If we control AI, it won't do bad things. Okay, those things are not reality. They are you choosing to not be fully awake, because that's the only way to deal with it. Now, if you were fully awake and you had no other options, then that would drive you crazy. And so you have to be fully awake and say, okay, no, I live in light of an eternity and to a God that is glorified, who will make these things right. I live in a hope that eclipses this problem. Now, that means a couple of things. One, we believe in a God that redeems all things, and he invites you to be part of it. So you and your own can't do anything about these problems. But God can use you to accomplish his work that he's going to accomplish. And so that's an exciting thing. That answers some of his big questions. What am I here for? You know, what is my purpose? Well, it is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and love your neighbors yourself. And God gives you a chance to do that in a way that redeems the things that are broken. And that we live in this reality that ultimately we believe God will make all these things right. Okay. So if that's a reality, then it's worth sort of like take a deep breath and going, all right, well, when I see this AI thing and I see this depressing thing about kids having romantic relationships with AI, I shouldn't be particularly surprised by that. Hurt, saddened, you know, reacting to the sin nature that I'm seeing there, but not particularly shocked. And so I'm not going to waste my time in pearl clutching. Like, oh my goodness, you believe this is happening. Instead, I'm going to get on to, okay, well, how is that redeemed? And I think, David, this is where there's two things that are pretty interesting. One is, you know, God can use you to be part of the redemption of maybe reaching out to somebody who's lost and saying, hey, there's a real thing here. The second is maybe an older Christian thing, which is, look, if you live fully awake and fully alive, then God has given you the ability to decide to do something different. So let's set aside the kids that need rescued from their AI romantic relationships, and let's talk about your kids or you as a young person. And let me just sort of start and pause it here. Nobody is forcing you to get a ChatGPT account. And nobody's forcing you to stay on it 6 hours a day, and nobody's forcing you to build a relationship with it. In other words, you can choose not to do this. And as a parent, you can choose to not make this accessible to your child. Now, does your child eventually have to learn how to use ChatGPT and AI? Yeah, I think so. And is it good to teach them that? Yeah, in the proper place and context it is. But is it okay, and does it make sense? Do you have to turn your 12-year-old loose on the laptop for hours a day with no supervision? No. You can choose not to do that. And some of the most powerful Christian witness through the ages have been Christians to be like, yeah, I choose not to be that part of that culture. Yeah, I choose not to participate in that activity. I choose not to put that substance in my body. I choose not to act those ways. Starting to the very beginning of the church, where the early church looked around and said, yeah, I choose not to participate in these Roman cultural things that dominate the scene here. I have a different set of sexual ethics. I have a different set of morality. I have different expectations for family. And I choose not to kill my baby girls by exposure. In fact, I choose to rescue the ones that are set out for exposure. I choose not to sleep with the temple prostitutes. I choose to make my marriage bed sacred. That's exercising a level of dominion that God gives you power to do. And I think sometimes in this, David, it's just a reminder to be fully awake and fully alive and say, okay, that's tragic. When God puts us in a place to help those people, we should do it. We don't have to choose that route. That's not destiny for you and me and for those who follow Christ.
Feeling stuck with traditional higher education? You're not alone. Many students want something that actually prepares them for life. That's where Ascend by Unbound comes in. Ascend blends flexible learning with real-world projects, mentorship, and a Christian community to help young adults thrive. From certificates to degrees, you'll gain the skills, experience, and network you need for your future. Ready for a different path? Visit beunbound.us/ascend today. I think that's a really helpful set of context in just establishing the fact that just because the world outside of where we live as Christians and how we know reality to be shaped and to be formed, just because it is extremely broken, and it does not mean that we shouldn't be saddened by it, but it does mean that we are now free to move on from that. We're free to look at the other options that Christ sets before us and say, there's a better way to do this. And even, I think, something that we talk about a lot in Unbound is culture making, in that I think that a lot of the times we fall into the trap of trying to, as hard as we can, to fight against the cultural trends and just saying, no, this is bad. We should not be doing this. We should not be moving towards this different thing. And yet I think a lot of what we've done historically, and I think what can be really much more successful in the long run, is saying, all right, yes, what is going on in the culture, the direction it's heading is bad. What if we create a different culture, a better culture, that creates much healthier people, that creates young people who don't feel like they have, who don't even think about the possibility of going to AI for romantic relationships because they are fulfilled in the relationships that they have, and they are confident that when they are in a time and place where they want to pursue a healthy romantic relationship, they can, and they will be able to do that successfully, and they don't have to struggle with the doubt that is driving a lot of these other young people towards AI to fill that void. And so I think it's worth noting that not only are we free to not do what the culture is telling us we should, but it is also free for us to go and say, all right, how do we create something better? How do we create something that just makes the other possibilities just not even attractive at this
point? I love that, David. And I want to even build on that and say, I think there's a way. So this is the great kind of, I don't know, excitement of the faith, right? Is that not only can you say, I choose not to participate in that, but you can say, I choose to join into that in an act of redemption that can become an act of worship. And I can take this thing. So, you know, I choose not to enter in an AI relationship with something. I mean, with some relationship with a computer. Like, that's absurd. And I'm able to say that because of the heritage granted to me by people that made different choices before. In other words, that taught me and trained me and the books I've read, stuff like that, to say, that's just absurd. I'm not tempted by that. I used to think this about drugs, right? Like, you know, I grew up as like the war on drugs and everybody's talking about drugs. And they made it act like drugs were like sneaking. Like, as an impression as a kid, it was like, you know, I thought drugs were going to like jump out of a dark alley and you know, jump up my nose and make me high, right? I mean, like
seriously.
But the reality is, I don't know that I've ever been in a position that I would have known how to obtain illegal drugs. And some people will scoff and say, well, you naive so-and-so. Okay, but there's a blissfulness to that naivety that has been a great blessing in my life. I've never struggled with being addicted to cocaine because I never really knew how to get cocaine. In other words, it's not an issue. It's not like I don't have any credit for being like, oh, fantastic, you didn't get addicted to drugs. I had any idea how to get addicted to drugs. That was part of the blessings of the culture that was given to me, right? And so now that's the kind of redemption structures you can build. It is possible to build a structure where every young person in your congregation, every young person in your neighborhood, perhaps every young person in your family would be like, what kind of moron uses AI for a relationship? Yeah, like that, I'm not even tempted by that. Why would I even think about that, right? It's a snazzy search engine, and it's really fantastic for doing this and blank. But no, that's absurd, right? And so I think there's an opportunity there. I was struggling for an analogy here, David, and let me try this out and see if it's too much of a stretch. And I was trying to think of something that's a little edgy or maybe a little slightly controversial. You know, using my thesis earlier that all things are going to then ultimately be used for evil, you know, one of the things we can stick in there is guns, right? So I grew up shooting and owning firearms. And David, you own firearms and shoot as well. And so, but there's no doubt. I mean, I'm not naive about this. Firearms have killed an absolutely amazing amount of people, right? It has made dealing death more efficient, and that's what it's used primarily for. And so is it a great evil in the world? Yeah, absolutely. In the sense that have people use guns for evil more than they've used them for good? They absolutely positively have. But my experience with guns is very different from that. I own a Mauser rifle, so a military rifle created to kill people in a conflict, right? That was sporterized, which is a way of saying that a friend of my dad's is a very talented gunsmith, and he recrafted this rifle into a very beautiful, I think objectively beautiful, sporting firearm that's designed specifically for shooting targets and hunting. And so, first of all, there's something redemptive about that. An article of war has been turned into an article of provision or an article of recreation, okay? It's maybe even more poignant because it's the same action type that was used in the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Not the same rifle, but the same type of action and things like that, right? And yet, when I think of this rifle, it is as alien to me to think about using it to kill somebody as I would think of using AI for companionship, right? In other words, it has that function, and yes, theoretically be used that way, but I've never considered this to be a defensive firearm. I've never considered this to be an assaultive firearm. I think both of those things are somewhat absurd, right? It is a gift that was given to me by somebody who labored over it, that my father commissioned for me as a reward for a particular achievement I had in my life, that has great sentimental value because of that, that is a mark of the craftsmanship that was put into it, and that when I shoot it, it's an act of worship. And if that sounds strange, I mean it that way. Like, it can be done that way in the sense that I am grateful for the person that crafted it. I'm grateful for the beauty of it. I'm grateful for the utility of it. We're talking about a piece of metal that's 100 years old that works exactly like it did before. And there's amazing science, right? When the steel releases and strikes the pin and blows the primer up and ignites the powder charge, and then the physics happen and it projects a projectile downrange, and it has a certain set of mathematical parameters that make it land on or off of its target. And I've spent thousands of rounds blowing up completely innocent milk jugs. And I've also shot quite a few deer that I've used then to feed my family. And so then it becomes an instrument of spiritual revelation, because, not to get too far afield, we can do a whole other podcast on this, but when you shoot a deer, there is an element of tragedy and an element of sinfulness there. Something that is beautiful died. And even with a clean shot, there's an element of losing life that is ugly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm to the point that, you know, I don't like killing things. And if I ever get to the point that I'm not sad about the result of me pulling the trigger, I'm going to stop hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there's a profound lesson. Something's died to provide life. Does that sound familiar to Christians, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we use as many parts of that deer as possible. So then there's hard, ugly, not pleasant work that comes afterwards. But then when it's done, there is a pile of meat that enters into our freezer that we then cook and I use to feed my family. And something that had to die is then contributes life to something else, right? Okay. It's a spiritual reminder. And to me, it's an important reminder of what, you know, it points to a bigger and deeper truth. All right. So now something that is, you know, on the whole majority used for evil, can I think be used in a redemptive fashion? And I use that as an example to say that, you know, if you've never thought of firearms that way, I think, you know, can that same instrument be taken and used to assassinate somebody? Yes, it can. Is it used for that more often than it's not? Yes, because we live in a world that's full of more sinful people than redeemed people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But does that mean that I cannot then, that it's evil or sinful for me to use that firearm for the things that I use it for? No. And in fact, in using it for the things that I use it for, I think that's part of the redemptive process. It takes this thing that is often used for evil and uses it for something good, ultimately constructive in the sense that I use it to feed my family. And to be clear, I don't have to feed my family this way. I mean, like, this is,
sure,
you know, I mean, I'm not making some subsistence argument. Now, that's a long way from AI. And yet, I think it's a reminder of, like, first, you don't have to choose to use it. And secondly, you can choose how to use it. And the ability to make those choices requires you to be fully awake and fully alive. And from a practical standpoint, that's what Christianity does. It allows you to wake up and think through that and then take something that could be used in poor ways, have a relationship with it, and use it in really exciting ways that can enhance your relationship with other people.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting example. And yeah, if you want a little bit more detail on how to use it in a more helpful way, we've done a couple of episodes recently talking about helpful ways to use AI. One of them was talking about how to use it to build a business. And I think that you could find that episode interesting. I wonder, Jonathan, if it would be helpful for us to conclude this getting even more practical by addressing the potentially some of the younger listeners who we might have who are listening to this and are seeing these statistics and going like, yeah, this is crazy, but I understand why, because it is really hard to try to actually find real community and real connection and think of even the possibility of finding a healthy relationship at this point in this world. I was recently talking to a young man who is not a Christian, used to be, or rather is no longer a part of a church and is not actively worshiping God. And he was saying that, you know, at this point, like, it's really hard to try to meet anybody. And he said, I think actually that people who are in religious circles have a distinct advantage when it comes to that. And I think, at least from my perspective, that's one of the key elements that can actually be really helpful for a young person who is struggling with this, is that if you're trying to find someone else to potentially form a relationship with, if you're looking for someone who shares some of your same priorities, who is serious about their faith, who has a strong moral framework, church is a great place to meet somebody like that, just very practically speaking. I'm not saying that you should solely go to church for the purpose of meeting someone to get into a relationship with. There are a myriad of other reasons why to go to church, but it is included. There is a reason why, just generally statistically speaking, that most Christian marriages are, and most Christian relationships tend to be healthier and tend to last longer. Not 100% of the time. Obviously, Christian marriages still have their problems, but generally speaking, tends to be a higher success rate. So that would be like the first thing that I initially think of in response to that. And Jonathan, I think that you have a lot more of a breadth of experiences when it comes to counseling young people who are in situations like this. So I'd love to hear your perspective as well.
Well, I'm tempted to say the most powerful piece of advice I can give to you is to go to beunbound.us, enroll in our Ascend program, and percentage-wise, it's pretty successful.
Work for me.
Be that as a big, present company included. Be that as it may, I wish I had some foolproof relational advice. And the reality is, yes, it's difficult. However, this isn't the only time and place it's been difficult. You know, there was a group of people that were so worried about this very thing that they got in a leaky wooden boat, crossed in a massive ocean, and took up residence in a swamp where most of them died. And the swamp was called Jamestown, Virginia. Jamestown people came for less altruistic reasons. The landing place would have been Plymouth Rock in Massachusetts, right? And you remember the pilgrims were fleeing a society in the Netherlands that they thought ultimately had no opportunity for their children to marry people with the same values, right? I mean, comparatively speaking, and then they came to North America where, honestly, the math got worse. It's worth knowing this isn't the only time and place that this complication has arisen, right? There's another argument that says that Rome became Christian because Roman citizens exposed all their young daughters, you know, put their young daughters to death by exposure. They were often rescued by the Christians who also didn't kill their daughters. And eventually the only place to find eligible women were with the Christians people, and the Romans married the Christians, and, you know, the rest is history. Whatever you think about history, the point there is maybe a point of encouragement that other societies have faced this and overcome it. And so that's one. The second is there's a very powerful, to David's point, proximity principle. You know, it's worth asking. And, you know, this is fully wicked, fully alive. Like, face the reality that sitting alone by yourself, wishing somebody's going to come, is not likely to make that happen. You have to put yourself in a position where you're going to meet other like-minded people. And if that means that you have to change churches for a season, if that means that you have to join a program like Ascend, if that means that you have to go to someplace else, if that means that you have to relocate, that's important. The third thing is to bathe this in prayer, because there's so many things here we don't understand. And as you bathe it in prayer, remember that God redeems all things. And, you know, in my experience, this never happens the way people expect it to. It often does happen in our timelines. And I have not been able, in observing this for 26 plus years of working with young people, I don't know that I've got any magic formulas or any pattern that I'm like, oh, this always works. But the things I do know are important is being in proximity to like-minded people, bathing it in prayer, and remembering that God redeems all things and that there's a purpose to whatever it is that you're in, whatever season that you're in. And to not delay your life to live in some future life that you think will start when you meet that perfect person, but to live your life now and trust that God will redeem it in whatever way he chooses, which is not always exactly the way we choose, but is ultimately the best way. So,
yeah. So, well, I don't think that that's necessarily a foolproof formula, but I think that's a very solid set of guidelines that I think applies to pretty much anybody who's struggling with this. So thanks. I think that's helpful.
Well, David, as we conclude this, I feel like going from meddling to preaching. Most people say I went from preaching to meddling, but I did preach last Sunday and I used this hymn and I was thinking about it. So it has an interesting link to AI. So we can post this in the show notes. One of the things that AI did that's very interesting is that for whatever reason, the AI YouTube algorithm served me up a rock version of A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. Now, I got to say, the YouTube video, I think, has some kind of cringeworthy animation. It's not animation. AI recreations of Luther and somebody else that I could just as soon do without. However, Yikes. You can find it on Spotify if you would prefer to just listen to it, which is better. And I've been too scared to see if there's actual people playing this or if it's an AI soundtrack. But I will say that A Mighty Fortress Is Our God is well suited as a rock anthem. And that there's something powerful about those words heard in a different kind of musical context that had some surprising impact on me. And so, for the great relief of David and all listeners everywhere, I won't attempt to sing it either as a rock anthem or as a hymn. But what happens is when you take some of these hymns and you actually read the lyrics versus singing them, they can have some of the same power that comes with playing into a different musical setting. And so because of the AI connection, but also because of the broader things we're talking about, it's worth listening to these lyrics written by Martin Luther in this old hymn, because there's some surprising power in them, but there's also some surprising relevance. So, and I used AI to find this on the internet as I was, you know, I typed it into Google and it gave me the AI summary here. A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing, our helper he, amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. So that's this reality, right? That's being fully awake. For still our ancient foe doth seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate, on earth is not his equal. Big sigh. Our ancient foe, his craft and power are great, on earth is not his equal. Do we in our own strength confide, our striving would be losing. What I said earlier, you can't do this. You can't beat this. We're not the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who that may be? Christ Jesus, it is he. Lord Sabaoth, his name. From age to age the same, and he must win the battle. Every age, the age with AI, the age without AI. He must win the battle. You can't win the battle. Fortunately, you don't have to. And though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo us, you're always going to be outnumbered. The demons will always be here. We will not fear, for God hath willed his truth to triumph through us. The prince of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom is sure. One little word shall fell him. That word, all earthly powers, no thanks to them, abideth. It doesn't matter what AI says, this word abides. The spirit and the gift are ours through him who with us sideth. Let goods and kindred go, this mortal life also. The body they may kill, God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever. There is a set of foundational eternal truths represented in that ancient hymn that whether you sing it a cappella with a piano, or if you listen to the link that we'll send you on Spotify as a rock anthem, has a set of truths that is you would do well to remember in whatever challenges you face, including weird AI relationships.
I never thought that we would conclude an episode by talking about an AI rock version of a hymn, but you know, you get exposed to something new every day. And I think in this case, the words of that hymn still ring very true. And I think is still even more proof that old principles, everlasting principles of the faith are still potentially the most potent tools that we have to address some of the modern challenges that are brand new that we still continue to face today.
Y'all think about what a good episode I just had. Not only do we get to talk about some interesting topics, but I got to actually surprise David. So my day cannot get any better. And with that, we should probably wrap this one up. David, I'll let you have the last word. I think I got a disproportionate mic time this round. So maybe we should let you conclude.
Well, I think in this case, we discussed a lot of just the brokenness of the world. But I think taking a real hard look at the brokenness of the world, I think is what really allows us to truly appreciate the hope that we have in Christ and just how much we can appreciate the beauty that is present because of the midst of just some of the insane stuff that's going on in the world. It helps us to even further appreciate the good that we do get to enjoy. So I think that this is a case where we got to explore that throughout this entire conversation. And hopefully we still, despite all that, gave you some real helpful practical advice, especially if you are someone who is trying to figure out how to make sense of relationships in an age where 1 in 5 high schoolers are looking to AI methods, and giving you some practical tips on how to navigate that and just how to navigate not being shocked by the evil of the world and instead looking to the hope that we have.
And wasn't entirely joking about what I said earlier. So if you are looking for people that are interested in real relationships, and just saying we got a better than average success rate, you should go to beunbound.us and learn about the programs there. We particularly might in this case recommend the Ascend program to you. And if you're curious what that's like, stick around a little bit and you can hear from one of our students about their experience. And if you have questions, give us a call. We'll be happy to talk to you. Until next time, be unbound.
Feeling stuck with traditional higher education? You're not alone. Many students want something that actually prepares them for life. That's where Ascend by Unbound comes in. Ascend blends flexible learning with real-world projects, mentorship, and a Christian community to help young adults thrive. From certificates to degrees, you'll gain the skills, experience, and network you need for your future. Ready for a different path? Visit beunbound.us/ascend today.